You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past, the podcast that focuses on inspiring you to move forward from what's been holding you back in life. Each week, we talk with clinicians, coaches, mental health advocates, and those who've overcome tremendous odds and now use their journey to encourage you throughout yours. I'm Matt Pappas, certified coach and NLP master practitioner, alongside Joanne Suppressi, author, certified coach, and hypnotherapist. In addition to talking with amazing guests on the show, we share practical tips and insightful strategies that empower and encourage you to break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and the negative mindsets that keep you stuck. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Welcome back, friends. Before we get started on the podcast today, I just want to take a second to thank our incredible sponsors. INLPCenter.org, offering world-class online neuro-linguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. I'm honored to be able to receive my certifications from INLP Center and utilize their research and incredible training programs. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. So my guest today is Elizabeth Corey. Elizabeth has a master's in social work and is the founder of beatingtrauma.com. Her expertise in inner parts work helps her clients and those in her workshops understand that in healing from trauma, we all have different parts that play active roles in our adult lives, and these parts can have a dramatic impact on our healing. Elizabeth and I chatted on the podcast back on episode 38, and I'll link that in the show notes, as we discussed more of what inner parts work is and some of the healing journey she experienced as a survivor of childhood sexual abuse and trafficking. During my chat today, we're talking about the power of writing and uncovering repressed memories. We talk about the struggles that many have in connecting with writing and journaling, and the reasons why we can resist this technique so much. Elizabeth shares some of her expertise with inner parts work, and the resistance or acceptance that our parts have towards being given a voice through writing. We discuss how building an awareness of what recovered memories will look like and feel like through writing can help us understand and react when they do surface. We also discuss flashbacks and how they aren't always the deep, overwhelming memories that can cause us to feel so stuck and triggered. We cover all this and so much more during my chat with the incredible Elizabeth Corey from beatingtrauma.com. So let's join that chat starting right now. So, hey, Elizabeth, welcome back to Beyond Your Past. It's awesome to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, Matthew. Thank you so much for having me back.
It is an extreme honor. You and I talked originally on the podcast for an episode, and I will be sure to link that in the show notes. That episode continues to get a lot of listens. So many people will benefit from the information you shared there, and I'm sure they're going to benefit equally, if not more, on this topic today as we talk about memory recovery and writing and some of the misunderstandings about repressed memories and ways that we can recover these memories and all of this type of stuff. So, before we get into that, though, if you want to take a minute and say hello and introduce yourself, that would be great.
Yes. So my name is Elizabeth Corey, and I am the founder of beatingtrauma.com. And my focus with Beating Trauma has been to help other survivors find that unconscious conversation that they may have been missing for quite some time. I do that mainly through providing tools for building awareness of what the unconscious might be trying to tell us throughout our daily activities, mainly through writing. I do a lot of writing tools and journaling activities with my clients, and I offer services in a few different ways. Of course, I have one-on-one client services available. I also do what I call a membership guide, where we go through different topics every month, and I provide resources on that topic to help people with their healing. And then I also have just recently started doing some workshops and webinars. And my goal is really just to begin bringing more of the unconscious forward for everybody who's been through trauma and currently feels like they're living in these traumatic patterns all day long, which honestly, a lot of us have felt that.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And believe me, I can relate to most of what you're saying here as a survivor myself. And I absolutely believe in the power of writing and of journaling. And I know that, you know, not everybody does. And there can be, you know, differing opinions on it. And for some, it doesn't come very naturally. It can be extremely difficult and, you know, sometimes triggering and whatnot. So we're going to talk about all of that stuff today here on the podcast and really share more about, you know, the importance of going after and understanding what these repressed memories are and how they affect us. So I will turn the mic over to you to share your thoughts on this and we can get started.
Okay. Yeah. So to get started, I'll just, you know, to expand a little bit about the writing, because you were making a really good point there, is that writing, the way that I teach how to write, honestly, doesn't come naturally to anyone. I find it to be quite complicated for us to get at writing in this way, mostly because of the experiences that we've had. We've created a set of very strong defenses, and those defenses are geared towards avoiding emotion, avoiding our unconscious, avoiding the past, avoiding what happened to us, trying desperately to stay away from that pain, because our defenses usually have come to the conclusion that only bad things can come from exploring that information. So we have figured out how to avoid it at all costs, not to mention the fact that many of the coping mechanisms we develop are things like perfectionism, right? Or, you know, these survival skills that we put into place that basically tell us, even when we start writing it, we're not doing it right, we're not doing it well enough, we need to edit that, we need to censor that, we need to stop, we can't be that visible, we can't be that, you know, emotional, we can't be that explosive, we can't be any of those things. And so all these coping mechanisms also come in and fight against us doing the kind of writing and journaling that is actually important for our healing. So I just wanted to comment on that. It's such an important concept that when you think about writing, you're like, no, writing and journaling is totally not for me. And you can feel all of these things coming up in your system saying all the reasons why it's not. Consider the fact that a lot of that is the coping and survival mechanisms that we created for ourselves to get through a really rotten childhood. And now we have to explore, okay, well, how can I start taking baby steps in that direction, knowing that I'm going to get a ton of resistance and that that's okay, and that what I'm creating on the page does not have to be perfect, right? Because that's such a big thing that we often hear. The other thing is, a lot of people say to me, well, I mean, I want to write, but I don't know where to start. Because most people think of writing, they think of storytelling, right? They think of going in and saying, here's my story, here's all the bad things that happened to me. And in reality, emotional writing is so much more helpful for us in our healing. And one of the things that I do with my clients and through my workshops and all of the offerings that I have is to help people with writing prompts. So it's like, where do we start? What are we looking for in there? What are the statements that we might be hearing in the unconscious that we're not aware we're hearing until we actually begin to hear a prompt and go, oh, well, I do sort of recognize that statement somewhere in my unconscious. Maybe I will benefit from doing a little bit of writing from that. And so when we are given the proper tools, writing becomes a little bit less of the enemy, which is honestly, I mean, that's not an exaggeration. And it becomes something we can really embrace. And that is such a key part of what we need in order to get to a place where we can recover memories, that it's definitely worth spending this time on here, because it's so critically important for us.
When I first started writing, now for me, it did come naturally because I had been writing before. Now, not from the trauma side. I mean, this was way before I ever started doing any kind of trauma work, but I used to write and I found peace with it. But it's a different kind of writing when we're doing, working through the memories and exploring the trauma side and learning to heal than it is when you're writing about, you know, a sports team or something, or, you know, your favorite recipe or whatever. So really what helped me a lot was to just write what I write how I talk and write what I say to myself in my head. And so, you know, you mentioned about the whole trying to tell a story, and I tried that route, and obviously it didn't work for me at all. And then I tried, you know, trying to make it absolutely perfect because I thought maybe that would help, and that didn't do anything. So I literally just started writing whatever came to my head in terms of what I was feeling or what was going on during a therapy session or what was going on during a coaching session. And I was just writing, I feel this, I'm angry about that, I'm happy about this, I'm upset about that. And really, once I started kind of writing out just what I was saying in my own head, the rest of it started to flow. And that's kind of how I found my groove, was to just say, what am I feeling right now? What am I thinking? What did that therapy session just tell me about myself? Or, you know, what am I angry about? And I really took kind of a no holds barred approach of just, this is what it is. And then over time, you kind of find yourself starting out making almost like bullet points of, this is what I feel and I don't feel, et cetera, et cetera. And then you start to kind of put a bit of a story behind it, but you don't even realize it's a story until you're done. And then you're like, oh, wow, it all actually flowed together. So just for me, that's kind of how it worked. And that's how I wrote my blog and everything, is just really what's going on in my head.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, I think the key, you actually use the word no holds barred. I think that's such an important concept. That really does go against a lot of the survival skills and coping mechanisms we put in place. The last thing we were ever taught to be is no holds barred, but that's exactly what our writing needs to begin to bring to the table for us. And it's a great and relatively safe way for us to begin exploring what it's like to be no holds barred, because that hasn't really been something that's been available to us in our lives. And so what a great place, what a great modality or venue to begin exploring that on the page, right?
I really had to open myself up. And of course, the whole perfectionistic thing, what you talked about, is difficult for so many, because whether you're a writer or not, whether it comes naturally or not, you feel it has to be something like perfect or amazing. And I tell you, like early on in my writing, and even now when I write, there are grammar mistakes everywhere. Half of it doesn't make sense. But my main thing is to just get it out of my head first and then try and make sense of it later, either, you know, in my own head or through, you know, a therapy session or whatever. So I really think that's something that worked for me. And of course, it's not going to work for everybody, but you're right. The whole no holds barred mentality is something that takes time to embrace, but man, if you can get there, it can be just unbelievably freeing. So let's talk a little bit more about writing in terms of writing from our inner parts and how that can help us connect with the memories that we don't remember.
Yes. So thank you. My favorite topic. So let's talk a little bit about that, because of course, the writing that I do, and I say of course because I'm talking to you, but not everybody who's listening to this knows this about me, but I focus my attention on inner parts. And this concept of inner parts recovery work is something I developed from my own personal experiences of recovering from dissociative identity disorder, which was my diagnosis from my complex trauma as a child. And what I discovered was that when I write from my parts, and this is where we get into this idea of emotional writing and not storytelling, but when I write directly from these inner parts that are in my system, I can begin to build an inner conversation, if you will, with my unconscious, because all these inner parts are sitting in the unconscious until we bring awareness to them. So when I begin to build this inner conversation, at first, it's probably just a lot of emotion. Like there's a part I refer to as the mean kid who will often yell. A lot of times they'll start by yelling at me, and then eventually that will move into yelling at other people. And, you know, it's not the kind of stuff you want to share with your grandmother, certainly not a newspaper, but it's such important work. And over time, what I found is allowing myself to do this angry writing, where I'm allowing all the curse words and all the stuff that society tells us we're not allowed to express, and I put that all on the page, that eventually that opens up the conversation to a point where I can begin to get memories back from this part. And the more we hear them, the more we acknowledge them through allowing them to express themselves in writing, the more they are going to share with us, because we are building that trust literally with ourselves, but in the form of inner parts. And as we do that, we begin to build on the information that we are literally being permitted to have by these parts of self. And so what I have found in my own work with clients and with myself is that as we connect in with these inner parts, they will share what they know with us. And the majority of my clients who have been writing consistently from their inner parts are in memory recovery at this point. And that has come literally from consistent and persistent attempts to connect with their unconscious through writing. So in a sense, it's not magical, but then in another sense, it is, because being able to get past these defenses is honestly 99% of the work. It's really in learning how to see how we try to stop ourselves from having this conversation and work with those defenses that we can really begin to open ourselves up to the recovered memories. So that's really the goal in writing from the parts, because the parts actually hold the memories. They're the ones that hold them for us. So when we are connecting with them, we are inviting them to share those with us. And that's really where the power is in the work that we can do, because this is something I really stress to a lot of people. I know that it sounds incredibly scary to consider going back and remembering what you purposefully forgot as a child. I get that. I really do. But what I can tell you is that when we allow ourselves to go to that deep of a level of recovery, the benefits we get from that are so huge, so much bigger than anything we are going to get from any kind of behavioral work or anything that sort of remains a bit on the surface. When we get these memories back, we can reframe them. And by reframe them, I do not mean change them, but I mean, I'll give you a good example. A lot of times we talk about self-blame, right? So when you have a memory as a child of being abused, you might have blamed yourself as a child, either because the abuser convinced you to, or because that's just sort of how a child's brain works, to be somewhat centered around self. So you may hold that self-blame. The problem is you're not consciously even aware of it, because as an adult, of course, you're like, well, yeah, that's not my fault. But you hold this in the unconscious. So when you bring the memories forward, actually allow yourself to say to self, right, that this is not your fault. And it's on a deeper level than what we can get just through the conscious understanding of that, bringing it down to a much lower level. And we're releasing shame on a deep, deep level when we do that. And then there's just the relief, the body relief of not carrying around what literally feels like the weight of the world on our shoulders. Every time we release a memory through processing it, we become lighter. We literally take something off of us that we're no longer carrying with us everywhere. There are so many benefits. Like, I could go on just for the entire hour on just the benefits of recovered memories.
So I'm curious, writing, and essentially I believe what you're saying in part is by writing, we're giving our inner parts a voice, right? A voice through writing.
Exactly. Exactly.
And right. Okay. And so in your experience, how naturally does it come to your inner parts? And I'm sure this varies, depending on what type of part it is, but do you find that your inner parts really embrace this having a voice, and obviously in their own way? You mentioned the mean child sometimes screams and that type of thing. And of course, with my clients, when I encourage them to write, I always say, just write whatever it is. I don't care if you're swearing. I don't care if you're upset and crying, just write it out. And so how much do the inner parts generally really take to this giving themselves a voice in writing? Is it something that they're really behind oftentimes, or is there resistance, or is maybe it's a little bit of both?
That's a really great question. And I will say that it depends on the part as to how behind this they are. If we're talking about the defenders, as I refer to them, these are the parts that have decided it would be a very bad idea for us to go through any kind of deep recovery work. These parts I refer to as the controller, the mean kid, and the karma kid. There are others, but those are the three primary defenders that I describe in my work. And they are generally, well, let me put it this way. The karma kid and the controller really don't want to write. They don't have any interest in getting into this and having us consciously learn what they know. They will fight us on the writing. They'll do it in really stealthy ways. And I work a lot with my clients on their defenses. Defenses can show up in some ways that just we don't really even think about. But the controller will have us convinced in our head that it isn't going to do any good. It's not really going to work. We're not going to get anywhere. It's sort of a waste of our time. And then when we sit down to write, they might try to, let's say, put us to sleep. Literally, if you ever picked up a pen and suddenly got exhausted, that's probably your controller. They'll distract us with social media, television, alcohol, you name it. The controller can bring out all the distractions to try to keep us from embracing writing. And I would say that a lot of the times that we're struggling to write, it's probably the controller coming in and trying to shut it down. Because writing naturally gets us in touch with emotion and gets us in touch with our unconscious in ways that the controller is not comfortable with. So if you've got defenders that are coming forward, they're not going to embrace it. And it can take a little while to get them to write the way that they really need to write in order to get to know them. But mean kid's a little different. Mean kid really does want to get angry. They wanted to get angry a really long time. They're often not that hard to hear, and they can be a really good place to start in this journey of writing because we probably had them screaming at us for a really long time at this point. So mean kid is there. And then once we do gain access to the inner children, they're very interested in writing. They're very interested in having us hear them. They want to share their stories. Many times people say to me, my inner child doesn't want to speak to me. And I'm like, actually, your inner child desperately wants to speak to you, but your defenders are blocking them. Because that's actually what happens. And so when we get to the inner children, they're usually pretty ready to tell us what they've got to tell us. And so it sort of does vary greatly depending on the part that we're working with as to, you know, whether or not we're going to struggle to get information from them.
Yeah, I know. When I started to get in touch with my inner child, and honestly, for the longest time, I didn't even know I had an inner child until I started working with a therapist. I'm like, when she told me that, I'm like, I don't have an inner child. What are you talking about? I honestly, you know, here I am as an adult in my early 40s at the time, and I'm talking with a therapist, and she's like talking about going down the road of connecting with the little boy inside me. And I'm like, there is no little boy inside me. But once I got to the point of understanding and not trying to rationalize whether there is or isn't from an adult level, but understand that there is and connect with that inner child on their level, which was huge. And so, like, you know, my writing from an inner child standpoint is obviously vastly different than from the adult standpoint. But, you know, utilizing the terminology and the things that either I said or would have said and the ways I would have said it and referencing things in my life and my writing that were present at the time and seeing myself in my writing through the eyes of the inner child rather than trying to rationalize it through the eyes of the adult, I think was really key for me, because otherwise I had this huge block that, you know, there was no inner child or he didn't have a voice or it didn't matter until I got down to his level, I think is really where I kind of had to go with it.
That's so true. And I will say that probably the part who was doing the rationalizing that you don't have an inner child was your controller. They sound so much like the adult that that's one of the most confusing things about this work is people are like, oh, I don't have a controller. And in reality, the controller is the one who sounds just like the adult in your head and they're actually running the show. So in many ways, what you were probably hearing in that rationalization, that logical case that was being built in your head, was actually your defender, your primary defender, saying, no, there's nothing here. There's nobody here. You don't need to look at that. And that's actually how the controller does their thing, actually. And they do it well, very, very well. So that is such a key part of our work is to understand One, who our defenders are, where they are, what they're doing, but then getting them to write, because it is in getting them to write, those defenders, that we can begin to break down the defenses to writing from the inner children. So many times I hear from people who've gone to sort of mainstream psychologists and they've said, get in touch with a child. But the problem with that is we can feel a bit like a failure if we've got these really strong defenses and we can't connect to the inner child. So that's one of the things when I work with clients, I always start them with the defenders, because if we don't start there, we'll probably fail again and once again feel like, oh, this isn't for us. So I always start them there. But yeah, so that's a huge part of what I do around writing, is really helping people to bring awareness to those inner parts so that they can write from them, so that they can get past those defenses and begin to really explore what's beneath that, which is often, for most of us, on some level, we will have memories there. Even for people who remember a lot of their trauma, there's probably things they don't remember. There's probably instances, even if they're just a few, that have been repressed. So even for those of us who may have a general sense of what happened to us, there's probably things there that have been blocked. And this is why the writing can bring us to that. The other thing I like to do through this memory recovery work is begin to build an awareness and an understanding of what it looks like when memories do start coming back. Because while some of them do come in writing, I mean, we literally write them, okay, and that is absolutely true, there is another side to it. And this is a really scary side in some ways, because it can involve the body, and we're not super stoked on being in the body. We have a tendency to try to avoid that if we can. But when we can begin to build awareness around what recovered memories look like and how they first show up for us, many people will suddenly realize that they've been getting memories sort of tapping on their door for a really long time. And they just didn't realize that that's what was going on, because their defenses would come in and say, no, 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 there's nothing here. No, you're making that up. No, that was just this, or that was just that. Or, you know, let's distract with something else. And when we begin to build awareness around what they even look like, that is when we can really use those as gateways to tap into the deeper understanding and deeper information that's available to us. And one of the main ways, of course, that memories come back to us is through flashbacks. But the problem is that the way that flashbacks are described by most mainstreamers out there is that there's something really intense and emotional and overwhelming and debilitating, and they're going to take us down and take us out. And in reality, a lot of flashbacks are not like that at all. And they're so subtle that if we're not paying attention, we can even miss them. So this is another aspect of what I bring, and we're actually working on this right now in my Survivor's Guide program, is figuring out what do these memories even look like when they are communicating with us.
That is something very interesting. And I'll tell you, I mean, when I first learned what flashbacks were, I was completely traumatized just thinking about it. I'm like, oh my God, you know, this is horrible. And for me, you know, a lot of them were that way. I mean, I was having all kinds of just crazy, horrible memories and things that literally did paralyze me. You know, it scared me. It was frustrating, but what you mentioned about how not all flashbacks are like that, you know, oftentimes they're more subtle and you might miss them. And it's interesting because I was doing a podcast with somebody just the other day, and they were mentioning something about their own journey. And I got just this small memory in my head of something that happened, and it wasn't necessarily overly traumatic. But it was just this little flashback of a time when I was a child around the same circumstances and where I lived and you know, what my life was like during the abuse. But it wasn't something that was nearly as debilitating. And I chalked it up to just me being a lot more aware and more in control of my healing. But in a sense, I think now that you're talking about this, it was more of, I mean, I'm sure that was part of it, but it was also just one of those random flashbacks that surfaces, not so much in a traumatic way, just because you hear something or see something or smell something or whatever. And it kind of reminded me that, you know, while the other flashbacks I used to have were bad, this one wasn't quite so bad. And it was actually kind of empowering to have that and to not judge it and to not spin out, which I attribute to the healing, to the writing. And of course, just maybe just because that's just what happens as a survivor.
Right, right. And I think that's a really good example that you're just giving about what they can be like. And let me give you some more examples, because it's actually, interestingly, been working on a chart this morning on this exact topic. And I feel like it's really front and center in my mind right now. But here's some other things that we might not really see as flashbacks that actually are. And when we can bring awareness to that, it's so helpful in our healing journey, not just because we can begin to use them as a gateway to recovered memories, but also because it makes honestly sense of what's happening to us on a daily basis. So there's that aspect to it too. But one of the main flashback types that is often overlooked, although I am starting to see more things on it nowadays, is emotional flashbacks. So when we are responding in, let's say, traumatic ways to current situations, either because of a trigger or maybe not, maybe there's no trigger to be found, and we're still having a really intense emotional response to life in general at the moment, these are actually emotional flashbacks. This emotion is coming up to us now, and it's saying, I have something to share about the past. This is how it felt when you were little. This is how it felt when you experienced something specific. And when we can recognize that, and it's hard, really hard to recognize that emotion is a flashback, because our mind immediately starts to work at telling a story about how it's about now. That's your controller doing that. They're just spinning your mind about, oh, I'm angry because that person just cut me off. Or I'm angry because I forgot to pay the bill and I should have been reminded. And we get in our mind and we spin a story about how it's about now. But in reality, most of the emotions we're experiencing are actually coming from the past. And so recognizing emotional flashbacks is so key to recovery. I just can't even stress it enough. And when we can write from that emotion in a way that takes out that current story, it begins to shift the message back to what it was originally supposed to be. And that is actually how we release emotion from the body, is when we get the original message, the past message that we're meant to have, which is coming from our parts. So that's probably one of the most misunderstood and prevalent versions of flashbacks there are. And many times when I write from an emotion that I'm having in the moment, I get a memory back. Now, I've been doing this a while, so I mean, I've learned how to do that. But over time, that's something that can be built up. Another example is body memories. So we suddenly feel some weird sensation in the body or some pressure somewhere, or even a re-injury of an old injury that we got when we were a child. But there's been no event that created the injury. It just sort of showed up again. Body memories can be incredibly debilitating, but they can also be really subtle, like a pressure somewhere that if you're dissociated or not in the body, there's a chance you're not even going to notice it. Many times body memories are accompanied with another form of flashback, but not always. So this is something really important to notice. I had one really bad one recently where I had something going on with my rib cage on the side, and it was so bad that I was actually having trouble walking. And then I recovered a memory of somebody actually driving their knuckles into my rib cage. And it was exactly how it felt, but I was literally sitting in that 24/7 for a couple of days. And I was like, this is awful. And that was a body memory that I was having. And until I sort of sat down with that and recognized and kind of worked with that pain and wrote from that pain, I wasn't able to relieve it. But as soon as I wrote down that memory, it was gone. So that's another way in which we're going to get flashbacks. Of course, one of the things we think about most when we think about flashbacks is mind flashbacks. And mind flashbacks are things like we'll hear words or we'll see visuals that are coming from the past. Many times, though, those mind flashbacks will pop up so fast, especially if it's like a visual, will pop up so fast and then go away so fast because our defenses come in and yank it away that we won't even think anything of it. And I actually refer to these visual mind flashbacks as flashes. I like that term better because it's more descriptive of what's really happening. It's literally like something is popping into your mind and leaving before you even have a chance to really do anything with it. And if we can learn that those are there and hold on to them a little bit, it allows us to figure it out. Because many times those visual flashbacks will seem pretty benign. They might just be a flash of a bedroom or a flash of a bathroom or a flash of a street. And it's not until we begin to explore it in more detail that we can discover that there's actually something else less benign that's happening beneath the surface of that particular flash. So I work with that a lot with my clients. The other forms of flashbacks, hallucinatory is something we really, you know, a lot of people say that if you're having hallucination, there's something really, really, really medically, psychologically wrong. And I'm not saying, oh, don't go to a doctor because it's just a flashback. But I am saying that many times when we get hallucinations, they are flashback, you know, they are flashbacks coming forward through that form, that is. And dreams, of course, dreams are very often related to recovered memories. And that is a form of a flashback when you actually have a dream that is a memory. I spent many years writing my dreams down. And then when I started getting my memories back, I went back and read them. And I'm like, oh my God, they're my memories. My dreams were literally my memories. And then the last one that I have as an example is intuitive. You just get a knowing. You get an understanding of something. You're like, oh my God, this thing happened to me. We are so quick to excuse those away and explain those away and say, you know, logically, that's not, it can't be real. That's just me making something up. But those intuitive knowings are one of the most important things that we can trust ourselves on in this journey. So those are just some examples. I know I've talked for a while. But these are great ways that we can begin to explore how we might be flashbacking. I love creating words. Flashbacking in ways that we didn't think that we were. And these are the gateways to those recovered memories.
Yeah, and the last one you brought up about the intuitive, I think is interesting because I found for me that the intuitiveness, is that a word? Yeah, intuitiveness. Now I'm making up words, so I don't even know. So you have to laugh about this stuff sometimes. But the more I wrote and got in touch with my inner child or wrote from an emotional standpoint and had the no holds barred mindset, the more intuitive and in tune with myself I became, so I could see and recognize where these were coming from and the different types of ones. So I think it speaks to the writing, which, you know, I'm curious if you found the people in your workshops and your clients have found this too, that the more they write, the more they become in tune with those memories and how to understand them, how to offer themselves more compassion and be more aware of what each one might be and where it's coming from.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think when we learn to hear ourselves through the writing, when we learn to let the parts of us that we've been pushing and holding back from expression for so long come forward, that we build so much self-compassion and self-acceptance. As a matter of fact, often that is because the writing helps us to ground. And when we ground, we're grounding into that grounded adult self. We're grounding into that true self that can hold space and compassion and acceptance for the other inner parts in our system. The controller can't do that. So when we're sort of enmeshed with the controller, which is what I call it when we're listening to everything the controller says, we can't find that compassion for the other parts because the whole point of the controller is to deny their existence and certainly any form of expression that they have, because that's how the controller has kept us safe and kept us alive all this time. At least that's their understanding of it. So when we begin to write from these parts, we begin to detach a little bit from them and ground ourselves into that grounded adult self. And when we do that, we begin to build compassion. Well, the compassion's already there. We begin to connect with that compassion that's already there towards self. And as we do that, it exponentially grows our ability to heal, because we stop denying, you know, all of the things that we've denied ourselves for such a long time. And we get in touch with this part of self that can say, you know what, I'm going to allow you to feel how you feel. I'm going to allow you to remember what you need to remember. I'm going to allow you to release this trauma and live the life you were meant to live. And we can't do, you know, we can't do that without finding ways to ground and communicate with self. And, you know, I have found that writing is the best way to do that. There are other ways, of course. I mean, we can do art and we can, you know, do body work and different things. But there is a message in those emotions that come to us. There is a message in those recovered memories. And it's so important that we take the time to understand what that message is.
I could talk about this stuff all day long with you. It's all just fascinating. And I want to make sure that we get an opportunity for you to share about your workshops and your webinar and all the resources you have in case somebody wants to learn more about your classes and everything that you offer.
Thank you so much, Matthew. I really appreciate that. I actually have just recently started doing webinars, which is interesting because I've always done webinars for when I've done consulting work with the government and things like that. But I've never done it with my business, and it's almost like these two worlds are colliding, and it's a perfect mix because these webinars are 90 minutes to 2 hours long, and they really give people a great high-level understanding of what writing can bring to the table for them and what these inner parts look like. And it's a great way to get introduced to this type of work. And so I am actually doing a webinar, which will be offered, you know, more than once. But at this point, the one that is scheduled for March 23rd, which is coming up this Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern time. And it's specifically going to be on writing for recovered memories. That is actually the name of it. And so we're going to be exploring how to begin building this effort within your system and looking for what you can do with it. I usually during these webinars have, you know, moments where I ask you to write in your journal during the webinar. So you'll need to bring your journal. But that is something I'm offering. We are also doing currently in the middle of a 2-month stint in Survivor's Guide for Life, which is my membership group. And we are focusing on memory recovery. So I've got several different avenues available right now. The webinar is $25 for the whole thing. And then my membership site is $35 a month, and each month talk about a new topic, but recovered memories is so much to discuss, we decided to make it a 2-month journey. So we're in the process of that right now. And then of course I also offer one-on-one consultations as well to help you kind of unravel the web that is your current system that was created by your trauma and begin to heal that on a really, really deep level. And so I appreciate you letting me to talk about that.
Absolutely. No problem. And yes, please do also let me know, you know, when you're going to be offering these again in the future, because this will likely air after your initial one is released. If you, you know, continue to do these, that would be great. I'll be happy to help promote them because I absolutely believe in your work and everything that you're doing. And of course, in the power of writing, as we've been talking about today. So Elizabeth, this has been awesome. I appreciate you coming back on the podcast, and I look forward to doing it again.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you so much, Matthew.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network.
Information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should supersede the direction of a medical doctor or any mental health professional. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. We would sure appreciate it. Also, please consider sharing this episode with someone who may find it helpful. If you would like more information on working with Matt as your coach, just head over to beyondyourpast.com and schedule your free one-hour chat. If you'd like to learn more about working with Joanne as your coach, please check out joannesuppressi.com and contact her for more information. We're always on the lookout for new guests. If you're interested in joining us on an upcoming episode, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon.